Hello, everyone. This is the Fifth Ethical Revelation Fellowship, and I'm Reverend Dr. Roger Paul, and this is my wife, Reverend Diane Paul. That's the first time I introduced you that way.
Yeah, I like it.
And tonight we're going to study paper 27, the Ministry of the Primary Supernafin, and that starts on page 298. That's paper 27 and section 0. And let's say a little prayer, and we will get started. Let me see if anyone else is joining us there. Nope. Okay. I'll go ahead and pray. Lord, thank you for bringing us together tonight, and thank you for this opportunity to come and learn about this wonderful revelation you've given us. We thank you for those who join us and those who listen at home later, and we pray that your will be done in this group and the study, and that we might all take something home and learn from this study tonight. We thank you and we give you the praise. In your son's name, Jesus. Amen. Okay, the primary supernafin. How about if I start out reading tonight? Is that okay with y'all?
That's good.
And then we'll go from there. Paragraph number 0. Number 1. Ministry of the primary supernafin. Primary supernafin are the supernal servants of the deities of the eternal owl of paradise. Never have they been known to depart from the paths of light and righteousness. The roll calls are complete from eternity. Not one of these magnificent hosts has been lost. These high supernafin are perfect beings, supreme in perfection, but they are not absolute, neither are they absolute. Being of the essence of perfection, these children of the infinite spirit work interchangeably and at will in all phases of their manifold duties. They do not function extensively outside paradise, though they do participate in various millennial gatherings and group reunions of the central universe. They also go forth as special messengers of the deities, and in large numbers they ascend to become technical advisors. This picture, the next thing we see is this picture, and it lists all the types of the supernafin: the conductors of worship, the masters of philosophy, the custodians of knowledge, the directors of conduct, the interpreters of ethics, the chiefs of assignment, and the instigators of rest. And we're going to study each and every one of these tonight. Another picture here. Okay, and this is it says here that the primary supernafin originate in the infinite spirit. Secondary beings of this order are created by the master spirits. Tertiary supernafin by the seven spirits of the circuits. And that's a picture of this. So the primary are from...
I'm not getting any pictures.
Oh, yeah, this is on the wall behind me here. Can you see us tonight, Millie?
I don't see any movement. You're frozen.
Oh, okay.
I see the wall behind you, but nothing's moving on it either.
Oh, okay. Well, it may kick out here in a minute here, I hope. We'll see. Okay, let's go on to the next slide here, the next paragraph, I mean. Primary supernafin. All right, Millie, would you take paragraph number 2?
Primary supernafin are also placed in command of the seraphic host, ministering on the worlds isolated because of rebellion. When a paradise son is bestowed upon such a world, completes his mission, ascends to the Father, is accepted, and returns as the accredited deliverer of this isolated world, the primary supernafin is always designated by the chiefs of the assignment to assume command of the ministering spirits on duty in the newly reclaimed sphere. Supernafin in this special service are periodically rotated. On Urantia, the present chief of Seraphim is the second of this order to be on duty since the time of the bestowal of Christ Michael.
Okay, so let's think about this. The primary supernafin are basically the angels of paradise, right? So most of their work is done in paradise, and that includes the orders of the primary, the secondary, and the tertiary supernafim. So most of these angels are in paradise itself, and they help us mostly in paradise. And we're going to learn this as we go through this paper tonight. But on special assignment, they're talking about some of these angels go out on these assignments. And one of these assignments that they take over is they take charge on rebellion worlds, the worlds that's gone in rebellion. That's what happened to us. So basically, we've had two of these supernafim since the resurrection of Michael or Jesus on this planet, probably one every 1,000 years, more likely. But they become the chief of all the angels, and that includes the chief of the seraphim, even though they are a paradise order of angel. Isn't that interesting? So when they send someone to take charge, it's the highest order available, which is the primary supernafim, to take over. And they stay in charge, I guess, until we get completely the everything has been lifted on this planet, we go back to normal. And then they would move this assignment over to a regular seraphim. Right?
What do they do?
They basically make sure that all the orders of the angels knows their assignment, and they're like the chief executive of the planet for all the orders of angels during this time of isolation and rebellion. Okay? You know, they're the chief of everyone, all the ministering spirits anyway, okay, during this period of time. It's interesting, we're going to find out later, that the tertiary supernafim, 100 of these angels are assigned to Michael during this period of time when he's creating the planet, you know, and until he actually starts creating his own order of angels with the local universe mother spirit. These tertiary supernafim basically become his right hand. Okay, and they stay until the bright morning star is created, which would be Gabriel. And then they start creating all the orders of angels with the creative mother spirit. So up to that point, these 100 primary supernafim, or 1,000 of them, I think, it's 100, that come with Michael, basically take up all the duties of the ministering spirits until he actually creates his own. Which is kind of neat, isn't it? They're like the backup, right? All right, let's move on to the next slide. All right.
From eternity, the primary supernafim have served on the Isle of Light and have gone forth on missions of leadership to the worlds of space. But they have functioned as now classified only since the arrival on Paradise of the Havona Pilgrims of Time. These high angels now minister chiefly in the following 7 orders of service. 1. Conductors of worship. 2. Masters of philosophy. 3. Custodians of knowledge. 4. Directors of conduct. 5. Interpreters of ethics. 6. Chiefs of assignment. 7. Instigators of rest.
Okay, and in these capacities, they're talking about in paradise itself, aren't they? Okay, so these different orders of angels are actually functioning once we get to paradise, and they help us up out once we get to paradise. So you can think of them sort of like the seraphim here on this planet, and when we get to the mansion worlds, they take the place of the seraphim, really, that we're so used to seeing. Right?
I haven't seen one.
I haven't seen one either.
When we get to the mansion worlds.
I want to see one.
Yeah, it would be nice, wouldn't it? All right. Okay, here we go. That's me. All right. So not until the ascending pilgrims actually attain paradise resonance do they come under the direct influence of these supernafim, and then they pass through a training experience under the direction of these angels in the reverse order of their naming. That is, you enter upon your paradise career under the tutelage of the instigators of rest, and after successive seasons with the intervening orders, Finish this training period with the conductors of worship. Thereupon, you are ready to begin the endless career of a finaliter. So it starts from one direction and moves the other, right?
It makes sense.
All right.
I hear an echoing.
Let me see if anybody else is joining. Yeah, it may be this speaker. I'm trying a new way of recording everything, Millie. So we're kind of experimenting tonight how this is going to come out. And I've rearranged all the computers and everything in the room here a little bit. So
yeah, we have six computers on, Millie.
Yeah. It's a little bit different than normal. Okay.
I can't keep up with one.
Me either.
Give me one second. Let me change this to the next picture here. Okay. Instigators of Rest. Millie, would you take the first paragraph under section one?
Instigators of Rest. The instigators of rest are the inspectors of paradise who go forth from the central aisle to the inner circuit of Havana, there to collaborate with their colleagues, the complements of rest of the secondary order of Supernatum. The one essential of the enjoyment of paradise is rest, divine rest, and these instigators of rest are the final instructors who make ready the pilgrims of time for their introduction to eternity. They begin their work on the final attainment circle of the central universe and continue it when the pilgrims awake from the last transient sleep, the slumber which graduates a creature of space into the realm of the eternal.
Okay.
It just sounds to me like we sleep a lot.
We sleep a lot. That's exactly right. And with the complements of rest, which is the secondary order of Supernafem, remember we talked about those a couple months ago when we left off on this study, how an angel actually sleeps with you during this transit to paradise in this very long last sleep, right? So they work together so that when you wake up, this instigator of rest that puts you to sleep from the last circle of the Havana worlds is the same being you first see when you wake up on the shores of paradise.
That's very comforting.
It is, you know, to think that there's this continuous person that is watching out for you all the way there, you know, to make sure that you get there safely. Now, something I don't really understand about that is what would be, you know, why would you not get there safely, you know? That's a good question, you know?
Well, in one place they talk about there'll be no more pain, they'll wipe away the tears, and I'm thinking, why would you have pain in the spiritual body? Why would you have tears if you're, you know, that far along?
That's right, that's right.
It just doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Rest is of the sevenfold nature. There is a rest of sleep and a play in the lower life orders, discovery in the higher beings, and worship in the highest type of spirit personality. There is also the normal rest of energy intake, the recharging of beings with physical or with spiritual energy. And then there is the transient sleep, the unconscious slumber when in seraphim, when in passage from one sphere to another. Entirely different from all of these is the deep sleep of metamorphosis. Transition rest from one stage of being to another, from one life to another, from one state of existence to another. The sleep which ever attends transition from actual universe status, in contrast to evolution through various stages of any one status.
So there's several different types of rest we experience when we travel with starting out with seraphim, mm-hmm. all the way up until we get to paradise. You know?
Do we view it at that time like death?
The first time, yes, we do, Millie. But I think the only other time we would even consider it even close would be this long transit from Havana to paradise. Because all the other times are very short periods of time where you go into this sleep or this rest while they transport you from planet to planet, the seraphim. Because you cannot be awake during this transport from one world to another. So I'm sure we experience this over and over and over and over again down through many ages, but it's each time it's a little different, because the transport sleep would be more like when we go to sleep here. But when you go from one type of being to another, like from a Marantia being to a first day spirit, that would be more of a, like a metamorphic sleep, because you wake up in a different type of body, right? Because the other times we just get tuned, right? From mansion world to mansion world, we get tuned with each new world.
Beings don't fear that like people fear death.
No, it doesn't sound like it. You know, I wouldn't think there'd be anything to fear in doing that. But it's probably such a magnificent change to go from the last circuit of Havona to paradise, because you would be a full stage spirit when you arrived at paradise, right? And so that's probably a total, when they talk about a metamorphosis, that type of deep sleep is probably totally different than the normal transport sleep that we've experienced from the climb up there. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, it more than likely it'd be quite different, I would think, anyway. All right, let me get this changed and I'll read the next one. But the last metamorphic sleep is something more than those previous transition slumbers, which has marked the successive status attainments of the ascendant career. Thereby do the creatures of time and space traverse the innermost margins of the temporal and spatial to attain residential status in the timeless and spaceless abodes of paradise. The instigators and complements of rest are just as essential to these transcending metamorphoses as are the seraphim and associated beings to the mortal creature's survival of death. Okay, and that's what we were just talking about. You know, this is like the seraphim being in seraphim upon death when we leave our bodies. You know, they have to transport our being, who we are, to the first mansion world, right? But that really is our only experience of real death, in essence, right? Because we totally change the type of being we are.
I hope so.
I hope so, too. Millie, you want to take the next one?
You enter the rest on the final Havona circuit and are eternally resurrected on paradise. And as you there spiritually repersonalize, you would immediately recognize the instigator of rest who welcomes you to the eternal shores of very primary Supernovim, who produced the final sleep on the innermost circuit of Havona. And you will recall the last grand stretch of faith as you once again made ready to commend the keeping of your identity into the hands of the Universal Father.
You can almost imagine seeing this Supernovim just touching you on the head, and you go into this deep sleep, right? And then when you wake up again, it's the same being that was standing before you, right?
As if you didn't go anywhere.
As if you didn't go anywhere, right? And these are called the instigators of rest, right? And Millie, you can't see the picture, but there's a picture of this behind me on the screen. If you ever watch the videos afterwards, you'll be able to see that.
That'd be nice. Okay.
Yeah.
The last rest of time has been enjoyed. The last transition sleep has been experienced. Now you awake to life everlasting on the shores of the eternal abode. And there shall be no more sleep. The presence of God and His Son are before you, and you are eternally His servants. You have seen His face, and His name is your spirit. There shall be no night there, and they need no light of the sun, for the great source and center gives them light. They shall live forever and ever. And God shall wipe away all tears from their eyes. There shall be no more death, neither sorrow nor crying. Neither shall there be any more pain, for the former things have passed away.
Okay, and that's a quote from the Bible, isn't it?
It sounds like it, and I really think that once you've crossed over, all that stuff is gone anyway.
Yeah, when you hit the mansion worlds, you would think that would be... the case, right?
Yes.
All right, let me see if I can find this Bible quote this is from real quick. I'm looking under the Bible references real quick.
But still, it does say in the national world that we do experience death and we do experience illnesses.
And in the national worlds, we do?
Yes.
We do experience what?
We experience, we have the experience of death and of leaving our surroundings and moving on.
Yeah, but that's not death.
It's not death, but it's a leaving.
It's a metamorphosis, really. Yeah, yeah.
But it's still, there's for some people, I'm sure there's some pain in having the moments leave, even though they, I know there's rejoicing too.
Yeah.
It's in quotation marks there, and it starts with, and there shall be no more sleep, and ends with, have passed away.
Yeah, and it should be under these Bible quotes, but I don't see it right offhand, because there's so many quotes on this particular paragraph, section. Well, you can hit the references underneath and look it up yourselves, I guess. Can't find it off the top of my head. Which is disappointing. Okay, let's move on. The chiefs of the Sinai. Okay, the chiefs of the Sinai. I'm up next, right? Okay, the chiefs of the Sinai, section 2. This is a group designated from time to time by the chief Supernathem, the original pattern angel to preside over the organization of all three orders of angels, primary, secondary, and tertiary. The Supernathem as a body are wholly self-governing and self-regulatory, except for the functions of their mutual chief, the first angel of paradise, who ever presides over all these spirit personalities. Now this is interesting because what they're talking about here is the original pattern angel. This is the very first angel that the infinite spirit created, back in time. That's pretty special, isn't it? And this angel is basically the chief of all the angels and spirit personalities of paradise. Pretty interesting.
Well, can we call the Supernathem angels?
Yes.
That's what they are, they're angels.
That's really what they are, they're angels. They're really ministering spirits. It would be a better term, even though they are angel. But in essence, they are the essence of ministering spirits who are created by the infinite spirit. Now, we have to remember this: secondary Supernathem are created by the seven master spirits, right?
Yes.
And the tertiary are created. We just read this, right? Okay. And the tertiary are created by whom? I just forgot.
That was on the chart.
Yeah, yeah. We'll come back to that in just a minute here. Okay. The angels of assignment.
Assignment have much to do with glorified mortal residents of paradise before they are admitted to the core of finality. Study and instruction are not the exclusive occupations of paradise arrivals. Service also plays its essential part in the pre-finaliter educational experiences of paradise. And I have observed that when the ascendant mortals have periods of leisure, they evince a
predilection
to fraternalize with the reserve corps of the seraphic chiefs of asylum.
That's right.
They're bummed to go.
Okay. All right. Go back here one second.
Okay. I find this next paragraph really interesting.
Okay. When you mortal ascenders attain paradise, Your societal relationships involve a great deal more than contact with a host of exalted and divine beings and with a familiar multitude of glorified fellow mortals. You must also fraternize with upwards of 3,000 different orders of paradise citizens, with the various groups of the transcendentalers, and with numerous other types of paradise inhabitants, permanent and transient, who have not been revealed on your ranches. So there's a whole group of them we don't even know of. After sustaining contact with these mighty intellects of paradise, it is very restful to visit with the angelic types of minds. They remind the mortals of time of the seraphim whom they have had such long contact and such refreshing association. So, the seraphim that we have in contact with once we get to the mansion worlds are basically refreshing to us, because when we get to paradise, we get to know all these paradise citizens and all these orders of beings that they have not revealed to us in the Urantia. 3,000 different types of paradise citizens alone, plus all the others, the transcendentals, things like that, right? Okay, now, Millie, I brought up a point the other day with Diane that really this book, if you think about it hard, is like a primer to the mansion worlds, right? What they're doing is they're trying to prepare our minds for the changes we're going to experience when we get to the first mansion world. We'll have all this new information to learn and all this experience to gain over millions of years on our way to paradise. So all this book is trying to do is bring us up to speed so that when we get to that first mansion world, we're prepared to go on. Right? That makes sense?
Pre-K.
Pre-K,
yeah.
That's right. That's all this is just a primer, if you think about it. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does, but not enough people will know about it.
That's true. That's why it's important for us to share
this book.
That's right.
This information
with other people, right?
They think we're nuts.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Yeah.
I walk every Sunday morning. I have a neighbor down here. Her name is Jennifer, like my daughter. At 7 o'clock Sunday morning, we meet at my mailbox and we walk the subdivision, which is a 2-mile walk.
Uh-huh.
Unless it's freezing. And I don't think I'll do it this Sunday. Just a couple of weeks ago when it was freezing. But her brother is a minister at one of this church in Samoa, and she and her husband go there. We discuss this book and what I believe and what she believes and stuff like that. It's very difficult not to just jump right in there and scare the wits out of her.
I know what you mean. Harder to keep your mouth shut than not, right?
And I said, you know, that's okay. I gave away all my Christmas decorations last year. I don't do that anymore. I don't do the Christmas tree. I said, he wasn't born in December. She said, you don't celebrate the birth of Christ at Christmas. And I said, I'll celebrate his birthday anytime you want. Mm-hmm. You can celebrate it. I'll celebrate it in December. I'll celebrate it in January or in August, which is when his birthday is.
Yeah.
The fact is that we celebrate his birth, period. Yeah. It doesn't matter when we celebrate it, it's just that we celebrate his birth.
That's right.
That was okay.
Yeah.
That passed.
That's right.
Try and explain to somebody why you don't want to observe Christmas with all the glitz and glitter.
Yeah, I know. You know, but I do enjoy the feeling of fellowship that comes around Christmas time. People start treating each other most of the time, except for the shoppers, with a little bit of brotherhood. You notice that there's a more of a sense of brotherhood than there are other periods of time. So
maybe so.
Kind of interesting.
So okay. When you watch the Black Friday sales and the way people behave, how can anybody need something so badly that they'll push somebody down and step on them to get to it?
I know, that's crazy. That's just insane. And they keep coming up with more and more sales, like what?
Mondays,
electronic Mondays, and who knows what else, you know. They're always coming up with more ways to sell things. Millie would take number three, Interpreters of Ethics, the first paragraph.
Okay. The higher you ascend in the scale of life, the more attention must be paid to the universe's ethics. Ethical awareness is simply the recognition by any individual of the rights inherent in the existence of any and all other individuals. But spiritual ethics far transcend the mortal and even the moronic concept of personal and group relations.
If you think about this, what they're talking about here is the brotherhood of man, aren't they? Ethical awareness. Basically, what they're talking about as ethics is how we treat other people, right? And their interpretation of how we should treat individuals and everyone else in relation to ourselves. And that needs to be taught in this world very badly.
I think we discussed the ethics and morals before. Ethics.
Yeah.
A man who's ethical knows he should not sleep with his neighbor's wife. A moral man might sleep with his neighbor's wife.
That's right.
Ethics is what you believe. Moral is how you experience it.
That's
how
right.
You use it.
That's right.
Ethics has been duly taught and adequately learned by the pilgrims of time in their long ascent to the glories of paradise. As this inward ascending career has unfolded from the nativity worlds of space, the ascenders have continued to add group after group to their ever-widening circle of universe associates. Every new group of colleagues adds one more level of ethics to be recognized and complied with until by the time the mortals of ascent reach paradise, they really need someone to provide helpful and friendly counsel regarding ethical interpretations. They do not need to be taught ethics, but they do need to have what they have so laboriously learned properly interpreted to them as they are brought face to face with the extraordinary task of contacting with so much that is new.
So you learn the ethics, but these angels actually help you interpret how to use those ethics you've learned in the different types of beings and the different types of groups and what would be proper to them as related to proper to you, you know. So it's helping you interpret your ethics with some other being's ethics, right? So that you can communicate and not offend someone else, right?
Like someone teaching you manners if you're in another country.
Yeah, what would be appropriate here may not be appropriate.
Well, I see lots of things on television that are, I'm seeing gestures in other countries.
Yeah.
And perfectly acceptable gestures in this country.
Yeah, that's right.
It's just amazing. Yeah. Amazing. What I was going for before was that a moral man knows he shouldn't sleep with his neighbor's wife, but an ethical man will not sleep with his
neighbor's
wife.
That's right.
That's right.
Okay. Let's go here. The interpreters of ethics are inestimable assistance to the paradise arrivals in helping them to adjust to numerous groups of majestic beings during that eventful period extending from the attainment of residential status to formal induction into the core of mortal finaliters. Many of the numerous types of paradise citizens the ascendant pilgrims have already met on the seven circuits of Havona. These glorified mortals have also enjoyed intimate contact with the creature trinitized sons of the conjoint core on the inner Havona circuit, where these beings are receiving much of their education. And on the other circuits, the ascending pilgrims have met numerous unrevealed residents of the Paradise Havona system, who are there pursuing group training in preparation for the unrevealed assignments of the future. So they assist us in dealing with all these different groups of beings, don't they? Okay, that's just a little picture of that.
Never be bored.
Well, when they call us mortal finaliters, we're no longer mortal, are we?
Well, they're associating us with where we came from.
Okay.
And that's part of the angels who track our history, origins, the angels of origins, right? They track our history. And they think that's important because The way we interpret things and we conceive of things is many times different as to what origin we started from. That's why that's so important. So if we started from a very barbaric origin, like we have on this planet, it would be different than someone who was born on a planet of light and life, who has experienced a higher level of existence, right? So that type of being, their origins would be different. So they would have less experience with the barbaric type of mind, right, as we did. So we have a kind of, we have an advantage in that because we understand that, but we have a disadvantage because we have to deal with all this during this lifetime, right?
I wish they'd mentioned a different finality so I could know what else there might be.
Yeah, it would be nice.
Somebody from another planet isn't mortal.
Well, they do consider all bipeds, I mean, all starting types of beings mortals. But what they're when they're designating mortal, they're designating them not associated with like angels and sons of God that are like the Lenanandek and the Virandadek sons and the material sons, because they have a different origin. They don't have a mortal origin. They start as descending sons of God rather than ascending sons of God. They become ascending sons of God, but they start out their career as descending sons of God. So their origin would be totally different than ours would, right? So that's part of the purpose of the significance of origins in interpreting where we came from, right? Because someone who came down as let's say Adam and Eve is going to be different than someone that started as a regular mortal, right? Okay. Millie, would you take the next paragraph, please?
Where are we?
Paragraph 27-34. All these celestial
companionships are invariably mutual. As ascending mortals, you will not only derive benefit from the successive universe companions in such numerous orders of increasingly divine associates, but also impact to each other, these fraternal beings, something of your own personality and experience, which forever makes every one of them different and better for having been associated with an ascending mortal in the evolutionary worlds of time and space.
So they gain experience from doing this with us, don't they?
So we have an effect on them.
We have an effect on them. They benefit, and we benefit, right?
I hope.
We hope, anyway. We hope they get some benefit from all of our nonsense, right? that's debatable sometimes, right? All right, let me change the slide, and we'll go over.
I hear you, sweetie. You need to go out.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. You're up here.
You want to just sit with me?
We relate to that.
For directors of conduct, having already been fully instructed in the ethics of paradise relationships, neither meaningless formalities nor the dictations of artificial caste, but rather the inherent proprieties, the ascendant mortals find it helpful to receive the counsel of the seraphic directors of conduct, who instruct the new members of Paradise Society in the usages of the perfect conduct of the high beings who sojourn on the central isle of light and life.
So these directors of conduct basically help us out doing things the proper way when we get there. We're not used to being there, are we? So they basically help us along, help us find out what's the proper attitude, proper way to do things when we get to Paradise.
It's interesting because, like with our children, we teach our children what the proper things are in society, how to act. Or we teach the manners. We teach them how to get along and be social with their, you know, their peers and their family members and everything. So it's like everything, you know, it runs parallel to everything that we're reading. It's like, I know we're a little lower rung, but it's still, there's a parallel there.
There is. Okay, harmony.
I met somebody who was opening a store near me, and I wanted to introduce myself, and I put my hand out to the gentleman, and he wouldn't take it, and said that in his religion he could not hold hands with a woman.
Really?
He's Middle Eastern of some sort.
Uh-huh. That's interesting.
He wouldn't shake hands with me.
Interesting.
How did you feel about that?
I beg pardon?
How did you feel about that?
It was his religion. It's okay with me.
Good. Okay. Just wanted to
do it. Yeah. Harmony is the keynote of the central universe, and detectable order prevails on paradise. Proper conduct is essential to progress by way of knowledge through philosophy to the spiritual heights of spontaneous worship. There is a divine technique in the approach to divinity, and the acquirement of this technique must await the pilgrim's arrival on paradise. The spirit of it has been imparted on the circles of Havana, but the final touches of training of the pilgrims of time can be applied only after they actually attain the Isle of Light. So they have to give us those finishing touches when we get there. It's something you can't learn until you experience it, right? As part of that experiential order of things. All right. Millie, would you take the next paragraph?
All paradise conduct is wholly spontaneous, in every sense natural and free. But there still is a proper and perfect way of doing things on the Eternal Isle, and the directors of conduct are ever by the side of the strangers within the gates to instruct them and so guide their steps as to put them at perfect ease, and at the same time to enable the pilgrims to avoid the confusion and uncertainty which would otherwise be inevitable. Only by such arrangement could endless confusion be avoided, and confusion never appears on paradise.
So they basically are there just like the seraphim in the mansion world to say, this is the way, this is how we do things, right? So you don't feel at odds or not at ease with the different things that go on, right?
I wonder what goes on.
That's a good question. Very good question.
Can you just stand still and observe? Do you have to participate?
Well, that's...
Lest you make a mistake?
No, Millie, that's not entirely wrong if you think about it. Even the... when we study here in a second about the worship on paradise, basically they say if these angels did not help us discover the proper way to worship when we get there, it would take hundreds and thousands of years for us to worship until the point where we felt satisfied in expressing ourselves to the deity, right? So, you know, that's not entirely wrong. Up next.
These directors of conduct really serve as glorified teachers and guides. They are chiefly concerned with instructing the new mortal residents regarding the almost endless array of new situations and unfamiliar usages. Notwithstanding all the long preparation, therefore, and the long journey thereto, paradise is still inexpressibly strange and unexpectedly new to those who finally attain residential status.
So we keep coming up on this new and unusual thing.
And strange
things just keep coming on and on and on. So it's this constant discovery, right? And this picture here, which you can't see, Millie, is basically just an illustration of the directors of conduct. All right, let's go to the next section here. Custodians of Knowledge, Section 5. The superraphic custodians of knowledge are the higher living epistles known and read by all who dwell on paradise. They are the divine records of truth, the living books of real knowledge. You have heard about records in the Book of Life. Custodians of knowledge are just such living books, records of perfection imprinted upon the eternal tablets of divine life and supreme surety. They are in reality living automatic libraries. The facts of the universe are inherent in these primary supernafim, actually recorded in these angels, and it is also inherently impossible for an untruth to gain lodgment in the minds of these perfect and replete repositories of truth of eternity and the intelligence of time. So all knowledge is entrusted in these custodians of knowledge, right?
Yes.
So they're living books. That's hard for us to understand.
But there's so much knowledge.
So much knowledge. That's right.
If they have it broken down into sections, every section has million sections in it.
So that's right. That's right.
Very specific when you ask a question.
Right. So you can. Everyone is able to access these things at all times. Right. So if you have a question about anything in all the universes, you can contact one of these custodians of knowledge. And they have the answer to everything, right?
Kind of like Google.
Yeah, better than Google. Yeah, really.
Very much better than Google. Google is good here.
All right. Before we go on, too, I didn't mention this at the beginning of this video, but for the people at home. But all these slides are available on the website where you found this video. So if not, you can find it on the Fifth Ethical Revelation Fellowship.com site, or the Atlanta are available. Okay. Millie, would you take paragraph 2 in this section? 5?
These custodians conduct informal courses of instruction for the residents of the Eternal Isle, but their chief function is that of reference and verification. Any sojourner on Paradise may at will have by his side the living repository of the particular fact or truth he may wish to know. At the northern extremity of the isle, there are available the living finders of knowledge, who will designate the director of the group holding the information sought, and forthwith will appear the brilliant beings who are the very thing you wish to know. No longer must you seek enlightenment from the engrossed pages. You now commune with living intelligence face-to-face. Supreme knowledge you thus obtain from the living being who is its final custodian.
So all you have to do is think about what you need to know, and these beings are available for you. Right? Instant Google, right? Hate to give Google credit there. But
When you locate that Supernathan who is exactly what you desire to verify, you will find available all the known facts of all universes. For these custodians of knowledge are the final and living summaries of the vast network of the recording angels, ranging from the Seraphim and Seconophim of the local and super universes to the chief recorders of the tertiary Supernathan and Havona. And this living accumulation of knowledge is distinct from the formal records of Paradise, the cumulative summary of universal history.
So they're the living angels of all knowledge, right? So talk about the smartest beings in the universe. This would be it, right?
True.
Yeah, it says that this knowledge is distinct from the formal records of Paradise. Does that mean it's different?
It's different because the formal records would be one of a material substance, right? And these are living records. So instead of having to look it up in a record or a book or something of a material format, these things, all you have to do is ask these beings and they know off the top of their head.
Okay.
All right? So that's a little bit different. The wisdom of truth takes origin in the divinity of the central universe, but knowledge, experiential knowledge, largely has its beginnings in the domains of time and space. Isn't that interesting? Therefore, the necessity for the maintenance of the far-flung universe organizations of recording Seraphim and Supernaphim, sponsored by the celestial recorders. Okay, so all these things we've learned of before, the celestial recorders, the Supernaphim, the Seraphim, all these different recording type beings collect this knowledge, and eventually it gets up to what? These beings, right? Millie, would you take the next one?
These primary Supernaphim who are inherently in possession of universe knowledge are also responsible for its organization and classification. In constituting themselves the living reference library of the universe and universes, they have classified knowledge into 7 grand orders, each having about 1 million subdivisions. The facility with which the residents of Paradise can consult this vast store of knowledge is solely due to the voluntary and wise efforts of the custodians of knowledge. The custodians are also the exalted teachers of the central universe, freely giving out their living treasures to all beings on any of the Havona circuits, and they are extensively, though indirectly, utilized by the courts of the Ancients of Days. But this living library, which is available to the central and super universes, is not accessible to the local creations. Only by indirection and reflectivity are the benefits of the Paradise knowledge secured in the local universes.
Now, can you think of a reason why this knowledge would not be available to the local universes?
Because we're not perfected.
We haven't experientially earned the right to this knowledge, right? And what could this knowledge be used for, if you think about it? It could be used for rebellion, couldn't it? It very well could be. Yeah. So that's one of the reasons that it's probably not just available to all the local universes, because we're still we're on the very barbaric level of experiencing life from the beginning still, right?
All right. Anybody who was vengeful could use it.
That's right. That's right.
To seek revenge.
That's
retribution.
Right. Mm-hmm. Knowledge is not only good.
Chris Christie should get his hands on it.
Yeah, it could be used for evil also, right?
That's yes.
Right. That's right. Who's next?
You? 6, Masters of Philosophy. Next to the supreme satisfaction of worship is the exhilaration of philosophy. Never do you climb so high or advance so far that there do not remain 1,000 mysteries which demand the employment of philosophy in an attempted solution.
Okay, the Masters of Philosophy. And I'm going to hold my comment till the next slide, because what I want to bring out is in the next slide. Okay. So let's go on. 1 second. Okay. The master philosophers of Paradise delight to lead the minds of its inhabitants, both native and ascendant, in the exhilarating pursuit of attempting to solve universe problems. These superaphic masters of philosophy are the wise men of heaven. These beings of wisdom who make use of the truth of knowledge and the facts of experience in their efforts to master the unknown. With them, knowledge attains to truth, and experience ascends to wisdom. You see that? That's a very important sentence. On Paradise, the ascendant personalities of space experience the heights of being. They have knowledge, they know the truth, and they philosophize. Think the truth, right? They have even seek to encompass the concepts of the ultimate and attempt to grasp the techniques of the absolutes. Okay, we're talking about out in the outer space levels, right? Okay, what's important about this, and we're talking about the masters of philosophy, aren't we? And what they're talking about as philosophy is to interpret knowledge and turning it and associating it with truth. Do you see that? That's what philosophy is about. Taking that knowledge and discovering the truth, right? And then let's go one step further.
All you have to do is get the masters of knowledge and they'll give you the truth.
That's right. Now, what the next step is taking that truth and stepping into wisdom, right? And by getting to wisdom, what do you automatically want to do?
Philosophize
and worship, right? They're all connected together. So this philosophy and truth connects to wisdom and worship. You see that? Okay? It's the natural progression of life. And the more knowledgeable you become, the more truth you know, the more wisdom you have, and at that point, what do you want to do? You want to worship those who have given you these things. Right? Just makes sense, doesn't it? Just follows. Millie, would you take the next paragraph?
At the southern extremity of the vast paradise domain, the masters of philosophy conduct elaborate courses in the 70 functional divisions of wisdom. Here they discourse upon the plans and purposes of infinity and seek to coordinate the experiences and to compose the knowledge of all those who have access to their wisdom. They have developed a high specialized attitude toward various universe problems, but their final conclusions are always in uniform agreement.
Okay. Notice here they talk about the 70 functional divisions of wisdom. We have a lot to learn, don't we?
I notice they didn't tell us what those 70 are.
They don't, because we probably could not even comprehend what they actually mean, right?
Correct.
Not at this level, anyway. You know, we have a long way to go to get to that point.
Next book.
Yeah, there you go. The primer for the Havona circuits, right? All right.
These paradise philosophers teach by every possible method of instruction, including the higher graph technique of Havona and certain paradise methods of communicating information. All of these higher techniques of imparting knowledge and conveying ideas are ultimately utterly beyond the comprehension capacity of even the most highly developed human mind. 1 hour's instruction on paradise would be the equivalent of 10,000 years of the word memory methods of Urantia. You cannot grasp such communication techniques, and there is simply nothing in mortal experience with which they may be compared, nothing to which they can be likened.
So, we don't even have a reference for learning this way, do we? I mean, not even close.
That's right.
That's right. We do. Long way to go, short time to get there, as they say, right? Okay. The masters...
It says that these techniques of imparting knowledge and conveying ideas are beyond the comprehension capacity.
That's right.
Of the highest developed human mind. So we don't have the ability to...
That's right. We won't. You know, and they talk about it being akin to, it would take 10,000 years the way we learn things for 1 hour of instruction in paradise. 10,000 years. You know, that's not a little bit of time, you know. So, you know, that's a lot of information imparted in a short period of time.
The what kind of information would you need that takes that much time?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure. The masters of philosophy take supreme place. Well, before I go on, you know, I have an answer for that, Millie. They're preparing us to go out as finaliters out into the universes, right? So this knowledge they're giving us is the knowledge of finaliters, right? It prepares us for going out into the 7 super universes and eventually out into the outer space levels to help administer and organize and train individuals in those regions.
Perhaps,
right?
It's knowledge of how it's been done before.
It may be, and it may be knowledge of the plan of God, what God plans for the 7 super universes and the outer space levels. There'd be a lot of stuff relating to that, right?
Yes.
All right. The masters of philosophy take supreme pleasure in imparting their interpretation of the universe of universes to those beings who have ascended from the worlds of space. And while philosophy can never be as settled in its conclusions as the facts of knowledge and the truths of experience, yet when you have listened to these primary supernophim discourse upon the unsolved problems of eternity and the performances of the absolutes, that's the next outer space level, right? You will feel a certain and lasting satisfaction concerning these unmastered questions, right? So they're preparing us for the next level, right? What comes next? You know, and they're going to talk about here in the next section about the seven jubilees, and part of this seven jubilees is the first jubilee of the outer the outer space levels. So it prepares us for these changes. All right, Millie, would you take the next one?
These intellectual pursuits of paradise are not broadcast. The philosophy of perfection is available only to those who are personally present. The encircling creations know of these teachings only from those who have passed through this experience and who have subsequently carried this wisdom out to the universe's space.
So that's what we do as phenolators, right? It's instilled in us, and then we take it out to the seven super universes. Okay? And the reason that it probably is only done to those who are present, because only those who are present are prepared for that knowledge. Right? That makes sense? That's why you wouldn't broadcast it. There's many that would hear it, and it would fall on deaf ears. Right? All right. Conductors of Worship, Section 7.
Worship is the highest privilege and the first duty of all created intelligences. Worship is a conscious and joyous act of recognizing and acknowledging the truth and the fact of the intimate and personal relationships of the creators with their creatures. The quality of worship is determined by the depth of creature perception, and as the knowledge of the infinite character of the gods progresses, the act of worship becomes increasingly all-encompassing, until it eventually attains the glory of the highest experiential delight and the most exquisite pleasure known to created beings.
Isn't that interesting that worship becomes the highest pleasure of created beings? You know, you wouldn't know that by looking at our concepts of worship on this planet, would you? And even the fact that so few people, compared to the masses, actually do worship, right? All right. While the Isles of Paradise contains certain places of worship, is more nearly one vast sanctuary of divine service. Worship is the first and dominant passion of all who climb to its blissful shores, the spontaneous ebullition of the beings who have learned enough of God to attain His presence. Circle by circle, during the inward journey through Havana, worship is a growing passion until on paradise it becomes necessary to direct and otherwise control its expression. So when you get to paradise, it becomes so overwhelming to you that actually need these conductors of worship to help control this worship of the beings and the masses on paradise, right? It'd get out of hand. Okay?
The periodic, spontaneous group and other special outbursts of supreme adoration and spiritual praise enjoyed on paradise are conducted under the leadership of the special corps of primary superintendent. Under direction of these conductors of worship, such homage achieves the creature goal of supreme pleasure and attains the heights of the perfection of sublime and self-expression and personal enjoyment. All primary superfem crave to be conductors of worship, and all ascended beings would enjoy forever remaining in the attitude of worship did not the chiefs of assignment periodically disperse these assemblages. But no ascended being is ever required to enter upon the assignments of eternal service until he has attained full satisfaction in worship.
So there has to be some being to stop the worship so that everybody gets to work occasionally, right? And that's what these conductors of assignment, their chiefs of assignment, do. They have to stop the worship, because if they didn't, no one would get busy doing anything except worship, right? And part of the process of paradise is service, right? We have to get back to work, as they say, to do our normal service. So, okay.
It is the task of conductors of worship so to teach the ascendant creatures how to worship, that they may be enabled to gain the satisfaction of self-expression, and at the same time be able to give attention to the essential activities of the paradise regime. Without improvement in the technique of worship, it would require hundreds of years for the average mortal who reaches paradise to give full and satisfactory expression to his emotions of intelligent appreciation and ascendant gratitude. The conductors of worship open up new and hitherto unknown avenues of expression so that these wonderful children of the womb of space and the travail of time are enabled to gain the full satisfactions of worship in much less time.
Okay, so if it wasn't for these beings, we would require hundreds of years for us to gain satisfaction in our worship, our full satisfaction in worship. What a wonderful thought. All the arts of all the beings of the entire universe, which are capable of intensifying and exalting the abilities of self-expression and the conveyance of appreciation, are employed to their highest capacity in the worship of the paradise deities. Worship is the highest joy of paradise existence. It is the refreshing play of paradise. What play does for your jaded minds on earth, worship will do for your perfected souls on paradise. The mode of worship on paradise is utterly beyond mortal comprehension, but the spirit of it you can begin to appreciate even down here on Urantia, for the spirits of the gods even now indwell you, hover over you, and inspire you to true worship. What are they talking about? They're talking about the thought adjuster, the spirit of truth, Holy Spirit, right? That's what they're talking about. Constantly moving us towards a worshipful state, right? We have a need for worship and we don't know that. You know, that's the interesting thing about this. Millie, would you take the next paragraph?
There are appointed times and places for worship on paradise, but these are not adequate to accommodate the ever-increasing overflow of the spiritual emotions of the growing intelligence and expanding divinity recognition of the brilliant beings of experiential ascension to the eternal isle. Never since the times of Grand Fonda have the Supernathem been able to fully accommodate the spirit of worship on paradise. Always is there excess of worshipfulness as gauged by this preparation of the preparations therefore. And this is because personalities of inherent perfection can never fully appreciate the tremendous reaction of the spiritual emotions of being beings who have slowly and laboriously made their way upward to paradise glory from the depths of the spiritual darkness of the lower worlds of time and space. Excuse me. When such angels and mortals of time attain the presence of the powers of paradise, there occurs the expression of the accumulated emotions of the ages, a spectacle astounding to the angels of paradise and productive of the supreme joy of divine satisfaction in the paradise deities.
Okay, so even the angels don't appreciate the way we feel coming from spiritual darkness and coming into the spiritual light, right? And that's part of this need for us to express this worship when we get to paradise. The angels, in essence, don't have that same need because they have not come from the same background, right? They only get that from the experience they gain from us, right?
Right. Contrast.
Mm-hmm. They do.
Sometimes all paradise becomes engulfed in a dominating tide of spiritual and worshipful expression. Often the conductors of worship cannot control such phenomena until the appearance of the threefold fluctuation of the light of the deity abode, signifying that the divine heart of the gods has been fully and completely satisfied by the sincere worship of the residents of paradise, the perfect citizens of glory and the ascendant creatures of time. What a triumph of technique! What a fruition of the eternal plan and purpose of the gods that the intelligent love of the creature child should give full satisfaction to the infinite love of the Creator Father.
Isn't that beautiful?
Yeah, that is beautiful.
This is a really gorgeous paragraph. It really is. Okay. after the attainment of the supreme satisfaction of the fullness of worship, you are qualified for admission to the core of finality. The ascended career is well nigh finished, and the seventh jubilee prepares for celebration. The first jubilee marked the mortal agreement with the thought adjuster, when the purpose to survive was sealed. Isn't that interesting? The second was the awakening in the Marantia life. It's when we come into paradise. I mean, the dimension worlds, right? The third was the fusion of the thought adjuster, which is an interesting question. If you fuse with your thought adjuster in this life, does the third come before the second? Good question, right? The fourth was the awakening in Havona, the circus of Havona, right? The fifth, celebrating the finding of the universal father, right? And we do that before we actually become paradise citizens, right? The sixth jubilee was the occasion of the paradise awakening from the final transit slumber of time. That's when we awaken as a paradise citizen, right? And the seventh jubilee marks the entrance into the mortal finality core and the beginning of the eternity service, the attainment of the seventh stage of spirit realization by a finaliter will probably signalize the celebration of the first of the jubilees of eternity. And what are they talking about there? They're talking about the seven jubilees of eternity and the outer space levels, right? And that will only happen when what? The Supreme Being comes into full fruition. Remember we talked about that with the priest stuff? All right. So it all fits together in an order, doesn't it? Well thought out, it is. All right. Millie, would you take the next one?
And this ends the story of the Paradise Supernovae, the highest order of all the ministering spirits, those beings who, as a universal class, never attend you from the world of
ever
your origin
you.
Until you are finally bidden farewell by the conductors of worship as you take the Trinity oath of eternity and are mustered into the mortal core of the finality.
Okay, and that's your path all the way through, right? They attend you all the way up to the point of your oath of Trinity service, right? The mortal core of finality. Would you take the last one?
The endless service of the Paradise Trinity is about to begin, and now the finaliter is face to face with the challenge of God the Ultimate, presented by a perfecter of wisdom universally.
Isn't that a beautiful paper? The next one is really wonderful, too. This is just such a beautiful paper. 28, we'll start next Wednesday, and it's a really beautiful paper, too. You'll enjoy that. Thank you for joining us, Millie. Don't go anywhere. I want to talk to you for a moment.